GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. I'm your host for GreenSense, entrepreneur, author, and environmental scientist.
I'm Bob Kessler, your resident radio rat executive producer.
We explore environmental issues, learn about sustainable innovations, and meet the passionate people that are changing the world.
They are changing it if their ideas make common and economic sense. That's how they get on our show.
And they have to make environmental sense and show why it's good for the planet. What are we learning this week, Bob?
You know, you can make tires for your cars from tomato peels and eggshells, food waste that we otherwise throw away. We'll meet the scientist who came up with that innovation. Also, a lot of news lately about the executive order from the Trump administration about the environment, and the National League of Cities has something to say about it. They're not buying it.
Well, both of those sound really interesting, and they're all coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense.
Great.
President Donald Trump recently signed the Energy Independence Executive Order. It could undo the Clean Power Plan, rescind the moratorium on coal mining of federal lands, and instructs agencies to review policies related to climate change. The National League of Cities has already signed its own climate action letter in anticipation of the order. To help us understand how cities can continue to fight climate change despite the president's actions, we're joined by Carolyn Berendt, Program Director for Sustainability for the National League of Cities. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Carolyn, give us the elevator speech and tell us who is the National League of Cities and what do you do?
National League of Cities is a membership organization. We represent cities across the country, 19,000 cities, large and small, urban and rural.
What do you do by representing these cities?
We really help them, help local leaders, in their communities in terms of providing best practices and resources in advocacy here in Washington.
And what has been the historic relationship between past presidents and the National League of Cities?
Well, under the Obama administration, cities had a good relationship. There was a former mayor that was in charge of the White House Intergovernmental Office. And we're really looking to continue that partnership with the Trump administration.
And what was the reaction from your membership overall to President Trump's executive order?
Well, we knew it was coming, and we had a pretty good general idea of what was going to be in it. But I think we knew the message was that cities are going to continue this no matter what, continue acting on climate no matter what. And really can't stress enough how much the partnership with the federal government is important for cities' local actions.
As the letter to President Trump reads, we urge you and your administration to partner with us to build cities that can withstand and reverse the physical and economically destructive effects of climate change. What could happen if cities don't get federal support on these initiatives?
Well, cities are going to continue along the path that they've laid out for themselves in terms of meeting their sustainability, greenhouse gas reduction goals or adaptation goals. But their job really becomes that much harder without federal resources like data, research, grants, technical assistance, and really without that national policy to drive the market.
That letter also mentions that there's been a long history of partnerships between local, state, and federal government to address climate change. What are you already seeing happen to those partnerships under this new administration?
Well, nothing quite specific. One thing that the executive order did revoke is one of President Obama's executive orders that created a state and local task force. And that task force was set up to provide recommendations to the federal government on how to support cities. So kind of right off the bat, it's ignoring a group recommendations that have been made by a bipartisan group of state and local officials. We find that a little concerning.
And funding is critical to the gears of government, and the federal government gives a lot to cities. Are you anticipating that programs are going to have some fiscal pressure?
Well, we've seen President Trump's proposal for fiscal year 2018, and it does. It cuts clean energy and it cuts climate programs. And we're working with Congress to make sure those cuts don't come to fruition.
Well, you represent a large constituency with over 19,000 cities. I don't know what that amounts to voters and population. Do you have those numbers?
It's 200 million Americans, 80% of the population.
So I imagine some people listen to you when you have ideas, right?
We hope so. We like to think.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Carolyn Barrett, Program Director for Sustainability for the National League of Cities. And we're talking about the recent executive order by President Trump. I'm Robert Colangelo. Your letter also mentions the need to update our infrastructure, especially in cities, something that the president has mentioned many times. Do you see any action happening on the federal level when it comes to providing funds for infrastructure? And isn't clean energy part of the infrastructure?
Absolutely, it is. There are conversations happening in terms of what an infrastructure bill will look like. It's potentially could be wrapped up in a conversation on tax reform. And our position is that we want a transportation bill to be inclusive of water, transportation, and broadband. And most importantly, that the infrastructure that is built is not only forward-looking, but sustainable for the long term.
That's hard to be forward-looking, isn't it? Things change so rapidly. We just did a story last week on autonomous cars and how cities are going to have to accommodate driverless cars. You're going to need a lot less garages and other things. And any thoughts on
Absolutely.
That?
Yeah, that is absolutely something that NLC has been working on, kind of preparing cities in terms of technology and infrastructure for autonomous vehicles.
Well, NPR recently reported that climate change can be one of the biggest threats to national security, and the key threat is sea level rise. And they gave an example of a Navy base in Norfolk, Virginia, where the sea level rose 15 inches in 100 years, and there's many military bases and towns located along our coastal ways, and we're experiencing sea level rise, which can be quantified and is undeniable. What's the National League of Cities doing regarding the issue of sea level rise?
Well, several communities are working on resilience programs like West Palm Beach. Florida is also going to be ground central for that. And, thinking about planning their infrastructure and making sure that they, to the extent possible, can prepare for what is coming.
What kind of bold steps when it comes to climate change and sustainability are you seeing among some of your member cities? Which ones are doing an exemplary job?
Well, you have big cities like Pittsburgh that are working on district energy projects and really shoring up their energy infrastructure for the 21st century. You have small cities like Georgetown, Texas, population of 50,000, a suburb of Austin. That's one of the first cities in the country to be 100% powered by renewable energy. Solar and wind. Many cities across the country that are leading on solar deployment that have been designated under an NLC program called SolSmart. So cities like Louisville, Denver, Pinecrest, Florida, Plano, Texas, and Salt Lake City.
And what areas what cities would you say are lagging behind, and what's the reason for their lag when it comes to climate change issues and sustainability?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily characterize as any as lagging behind, but there certainly are cities that are kind of in all stages of thinking about this. And small cities face a lot of challenges in terms of funding, resources, and staff capacity.
And is that where your organization comes in, is you can provide standard operating procedures and comparisons of cities that are doing well?
Well, we do try to provide tools and resources and highlight some of the easy steps that cities can take. One of the easiest things they can do is energy efficiency improvements. And not only is there a payback in terms of energy savings, but there's a payback in real dollars too.
In closing, what's the key issue from the National League of Cities that you are pushing when it comes to sustainability and climate change?
I think the key issue is that this is the local issue. Cities are the first responders, and they can't afford to ignore it. They have to take action to protect their citizens and their city and public health. And not only is it good for the environment, but it's good for their economies.
That's Carolyn Berendt, Program Director for Sustainability for the National League of Cities. This is Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
The headline in Smithsonian reads, "From trash to treads, turning tomato peels and eggshells into tires." And that's precisely what they're working on at The Ohio State University, taking food waste that often ends up in landfills and using it in tire production. Dr. Katrina Cornish is with Biomaterials Research, who's made the discovery, and she joins us now on Green Sense. Welcome, Dr. Cornish.
Well, thank you, Robert. Pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us exactly, how will tomato peels and eggshells be used in tire production?
Well, if you think about tires are black, okay? But what most people don't realize is that they're black because of a reinforcing filler that goes into the tires to make them strong and sturdy. The rubber itself is actually like an amber color. Now, the tire is made from a combination of natural rubber and synthetic rubber. And the higher the performance of the tire, the larger the percentage of natural rubber. So, for example, an airplane tire is 100% natural. There's no synthetic rubber in there at all because it wouldn't be able to take the stress of landing. Your tire would blow up. Anyway, so, yes. So in our program here, we're working on domestic rubber production. But we're also working on replacing the petro-derived carbon black, at least in some part, with something else that would be more sustainable. Now, when I came to OSU, working in agriculture and in rubber, Polymers are a very large industry in the state, as is agriculture. I looked at what else could we be useful for? What else could we do in my program? And so food processing is another of the really big industries in Ohio. And so I thought, well, how can we help the food processors? And so, well, I'm not a food chemist, so I said, well, can we do anything to help them with their waste issues? So we wrote to a lot of food processors and said, here we are, we'd like to look at your waste to see if we can valorize them for you so you don't have to throw them away. So we got a lot of wastes in, and two of them were tomato peels and eggshells. Then the other thing why I was really interested in getting the tomato peels was I lived in California a long time, and you see those giant hoppers of tomatoes running down the freeways. And I was like, why isn't the one in the bottom of that giant hopper squashed by 500 sitting on its head? Okay, well, they aren't, and it's because the peels are very, very strong and tough. So you don't eat those. Those are not the same tomatoes, I suppose I should say tomatoes, that you see in your salad. Okay, so, but these are all peeled at processing plants. So I was very interested in tough materials that are produced en masse at one location. So a food processing plant that uses a lot of eggs, you've got a big pile of eggshells. A tomato sauce factory, you've got a lot of tomato peels. So very accessible materials. So I thought the tomato peels, very strong and tough, might be a good substitute. And I thought the eggshells would be a polymer extender. So we were very excited to find we were wrong about that, and that the eggshells are actually a reinforcing filler like carbon black, and the tomato peels are a reinforcing filler like carbon black. So what we then did was we did a lot of experiments where we partially replaced more and more of the carbon black with these alternative fillers. And it just worked really, really well. We're not suggesting that you replace all of the carbon black with these, but that you do a partial replacement. So we can go up to different levels in different types of products and different performances that are required. So that's basically how it came about.
Katrina, I don't know what it is, but when people speak with a British accent, they just sound smarter. But you are smart too. So because I never thought of that you've got all these tomatoes and the bottom ones should be squished. Even that observation, I think, was quite remarkable. But this is fantastic that you've been able to piece these two organic materials together and come up with a replacement. What I found is that when you start to diagnose and analyze tires, there's a lot of things that go into a tire that are quite toxic. Have you looked at the whole range of materials and other things that can be replaced?
Well, we have looked at this in part, but we're mostly interested in the elastomer components and the things that go into those elastomers. So we're looking at the other ingredients that are in the tire. For example, the processing oil. There's been some work that other people have done where they've been replacing the petroleum-derived processing oil with soybean oil, for example. So there's work like that that is going on. And we're looking at another way of replacing that processing oil with something that won't be able to vent, won't be aromatic or be able to come off in the heat. So we're not sure yet whether that will work. So, but we're working on those other sorts of things. But in general, tires, you only really see how toxic tires are if they catch fire.
Yes.
So as long as we don't let them catch fire, we're probably okay.
My name's Robert Colangelo. You're listening to Green Sense. My guest is Dr. Katrina Cornish. She's a biomaterials researcher with the Ohio State University. And she's found a way to use food waste to make tires more sustainable. What are some of the biggest obstacles preventing this research from becoming a commercial reality?
Well, first, some of the tire companies have, which they are already, some of the tire companies who are sampling these products have to validate them in their particular tires to make sure that they have durability, have the safety features, things like this that tires must have. So initially, I actually expect these materials to first enter the marketplace in things like seals and gaskets and hoses, automotive parts, things like that, before they actually hit tires. The other issue with that, of course, is the scale. You know, tires need a lot of material. Now, we have a lot of tomato peels and hundreds of thousands of tons of tomato peels and eggshells wasted every year. So we have plenty of material, but we have to make the filler. Now, what I'm hoping to see is that the food processing companies that produce the crude shells and the crude tomato peels will get sufficiently involved with this that they will also become the generator of the filler, so that they will grind up the materials at their locations, because that would save a lot in transportation, and then they'd have this valorized stream where they could send out totes or trucks of their new fillers to the tire manufacturing plants. But that's the sort of thing that will have to happen in the long term for this to be fully commercializable, because so much of it will be needed.
I found the best way to create change is give it economic reason. Talk a little bit about the economics of using these food waste versus the traditional materials.
Well, carbon black is actually not a very cheap material, so that's actually a significant cost. So we think that with these materials, we could certainly match the cost of carbon black and can probably come in under. So I would expect that we can come in under the cost of that. And then also we add value to the food processor as well. So it's not just the greener position that these fillers will allow. I think we can actually reduce cost.
What about color? Will our tires now look red and eggshell white?
Well, because we're not completely replacing them, not in a carbon black filled tire, it's still going to look black, even with quite a heavy loading of eggshells or tomato peels. The best you could hope for is a slightly less black or a slightly reddish brown tint to your black. But we are also proceeding with this in looking at it as these fillers in combination with the silica filler, which is used in some applications instead of carbon black. And actually last week my student made some beautiful orange rubber made with eggshells. So that we are going towards colored rubbers as well. But
yes,
not with carbon black, because that is so black.
In this day and age, colors infiltrated every part of our life. Well, tell us a little bit more of the other kinds of exciting biomaterial research you're working on that you may be able to share with us.
Well, the main core focus of this is starting to produce rubber in the United States. See, a lot of these raw materials are not being able to produce enough to meet projected demands as the globe develops. So, for example, the natural rubber supply, there's about over 12 million tons of that per year, and it's all produced by hand tapping into little cups. But there's a big problem with supply of that. One of the things is that now what you do in a rubber tree country, you can only grow rubber cheaply if your country is poor. As your country develops, you'll cut down the rubber trees and plant palm oil instead. So you can see that happening in Malaysia. There's been an immense cutting down originally of the rainforest, planting rubber trees, cut those down, put palm oil. But we still need natural rubber, so then that goes to another country. They cut down some more forest, plant some more rubber trees. But you run out of that, and there's now a deforestation moratorium which says, come on, guys, we've got to stop cutting down all this rainforest to plant rubber trees. Okay, so Europe and North America, particularly, also China, are putting significant efforts into trying to grow other rubber-producing crop plants in their countries and not be so dependent upon this one single clonal, mind you, species grown in Southeast Asia, which is also very prone to crop failure. So anyway, we're completely dependent on this, so we're actually working on both the rubber dandelion or rubber root in Ohio, which can be grown across the northern U.S., and then also wayuli, which is a desert shrub from the Chihuahuan Desert of Texas and Mexico in the southwest of the United States. And that material is particularly interesting because it can be used safely if you have type 1 latex allergy. And it also is softer and stretchier than regular rubber, so it's a very high-performance polymer. You know, for example, like a weather balloon could go higher and carry a heavier load than any other weather balloon, you know, that sort of thing. So there's some markets that you could approach or give an advantage to a company if they wanted to do this that could allow them to outcompete or have a better product than their competitors. So those are the sorts of things that we're looking at. Now, the rubber root rubber is almost identical to the rubber from the Hevea rubber tree. So that has its own niche in that it can be more or less a drop-in. whereas Oyulu rubber does take a little bit of different chemistry to make that work as well as it does.
Dr. Cornish, I could listen to you all day, but our time is up. I really appreciate you for joining us on our show, and we'll look forward to having you back on the show sometime in the future as you get some new developments ready to tell the world about.
Okay, it would be my pleasure.
That's Dr. Katrina Cornish, biomaterials researcher with Ohio State University, telling us about the new method of tire production using tomato peels and eggshells. I'm Robert Colangelo, reminding you to subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. If it's anything on your mind or you have some thoughts, send me an email to robert@greensenseshow.com. We'll be back next week with...
Next week, the humble fungus. Yes, mushrooms are turning out, according to a new study, to be quite the sustainable crop. Also, Timberland shoes and boots, they've been around for years. Well, they are taking some big steps to become more sustainable.
Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play by visiting greensensefarms.com and view the list of radio stations that air our show. Our goal is to be an honest broker of sustainable information so that you can make informed decisions. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.
GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.